Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's December 11th, 2015. You're listening to the best poker cast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long. How are you holding up, buddy? I know it's been a tough week for you.
Yeah, it's tough.
Neil Perdahl deciding, like the rest of us, that he's sick and tired of Tom Sawyer.
I
thought it was really telling that it was a very interesting interview in Drummer Beat, right? You read this, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And the fact that he said that he just cannot in good conscience continue to tour when people like Chris Two Nickels Cosenza are paying $65 for a T-shirt, I thought it took a lot of courage.
Fifty-five.
Sorry,
typo in the article you read, probably.
Well, it depends on where taxes are.
he was doing Canadian money. That's what it was.
I thought that was big of him to say. So.
Yeah. Well, it's no shock. We all knew he retired. It's that he retired from touring because he's 70 freaking years old. 63 is tough to be on tour, but he still could do. You know, they can still do studio albums and stuff, so it's not completely. We all know that this is their last tour, so it's not a big surprise to the real, Rush Nation. But
they can hologram them too for the rest.
Yeah,
of the
it's right. So,
but no, I think this is funny. We're going to talk about poker. It's just a little light poker show. So, but I thought this was interesting because I get this a lot with the freaky freaks on my Hair Nation boards,
right?
You know, because every doesn't matter what hobby it is, you get people that just hold on a little too tight, right? And they're like, oh, man, these, the rat's not the same without Stephen Piercy. And I'm like, it isn't. But you realize these guys are all, like, almost dead right now, right?
Yeah.
And so you can't get used to a new guitarist, a new lead singer, a new drummer to keep the music going. To me, I like the fact that my bands are still touring, even if, you know, they're like, you know, pieces stuck together chewing gum.
Or can't you just let go?
I mean,
people, let go of your childhood, man. It's okay. It's okay to let go.
It's like that Saturday Night Live skit with William Shatner taking Q&As at the Star Trek convention.
Yes. That was great.
How many horses do you own? 7? Does that count to one born this morning? 8. Folks, get out. But no, so, you know, it was interesting. Again, I'm not a Rush fan. I just like to, you know, bust your chops about it. But I do feel bad when I see people, oh, my God, it's the end of Rush. I'm like, it's one guy, dude.
It's all right, man.
Music will live on.
That's why they made, 25 studio albums or whatever, so that we can keep listening to their music and not have to worry about new stuff coming out. Just listen to the older stuff. And they're a progressive band, so... You know, all our albums tend to get different from the one before, so you got your variety, too. So just relax, everybody. It's not a big deal. I'm okay. If I'm okay, you should be okay.
Nothing to see here. All right, well, like I said, it's December here, and people, I guess, apparently quit playing poker in December. So, you know, we don't get a lot of news. We don't get a lot of contributions from the NEM Nation. So, but the show must go on. And it's sad because this would have been an excellent week for us to be phoning it in on an Ante Up poker cruise, right?
Yeah.
But no, we're going to make it work. So, so Alex Dreyfus is always good for filling in a spot on the show when we have nothing else to talk
Frequent
about.
Frequent contributor Alex Dreyfus, who doesn't get any swag because he's been on the show already so many times.
All right, so Poker's leading innovator ended 2015 this week with a Facebook post where he proposes that poker's first boom, which was fueled by money, has now shifted to one fueled by entertainment. Specifically says this, quote, "The modern poker boom began with the moneymaker effect at the 2003 World Series of Poker, fueled by online poker and exposed by ESPN. Ironically, that name defined the narrative of poker for the next decade. Money. Yet as with any other game or sport, the vast majority of poker consumers play primarily for the game's entertainment value. Winning cash is a nice byproduct, not the central long-term motivating factor. It's only the game's very small yet vocal minority, professionals and amateurs aspiring to become professionals, who play primarily for money. Now he goes on to say that poker is changing from a gambling experience to a fan experience, and the poker will be intertwined with the burgeoning esports industry. I know you have thoughts on this.
He put me on the spot.
Well, and the reason I think you have opinions on this is because a couple things. One, I remember like way back in our home game when we were still trying, you know, like we're on our baby draft legs, you know, trying to figure out where we're going. At one point, you're like, "Hey, why don't we just get together and play some tournaments for fun?" And I think everybody at that gathering is still laughing uncontrollably. Why would we do that, Costanza? Why would we play for fun? This is poker. We play for money.
All right.
And I know you also go up and play for fun with your folks and your family, right, too. So you're one of these players that's able to find the enjoyment in the game without the money. However, I will say when you go to a casino, it's all about money for you.
Yeah.
So yeah. You are a, what's a paradox, a quandary? I don't know.
I think that it's always going to be a gambling experience. I don't think it's changing at all. I think that there are a lot of people, when you use social media and regular television and things like that, that some people who get brought into the game now might think of it as this fan experience he's talking about, where you're following these people, you're watching them on TV, you're following them on social media, whatever, and it's that kind of, okay, I want to enjoy this world kind of thing. But when it gets right down to it, you can't do that completely without experiencing what they're experiencing, and it involves money. And I don't think it's funny because he talks about it being ironic, which I don't think it's ironic, but you know, he says that back then it was money and it was fueled
Black
by
Flag
that.
Or Chardonnay is ironic.
But I think it's always going to be money, and that's always going to be the motivating factor. I don't think anyone would be motivated more by entertainment than they would be by money, because what makes it entertaining is winning the money. So it's still always money. I don't see maybe that's because that's what his business model is gearing toward. That's why he's saying this, that he's trying to make it entertaining. And so by saying that, you know, he's pushing his brand a little more. But to me, I still think it's always going to be money as a motivating factor. And even that, if you did believe that his business model is entertaining a lot of people and giving organization to something to make it more entertaining, sort of like football, ultimately it's still money driving him to do that because he's making money from it. So I don't know. I think it's always going to be a gambling experience first.
Well, you know, the more I hear from him and talk and see how he's trying to go with these, you know, teams and stuff, the more I think about that Matt Parker, Trey Stowe movie, Basketball.
Yeah.
Did you ever see that?
Yeah, I saw that. It was hilarious.
Where it's like this stupid game that they invented at some party and turned it into like this new sports thing with franchises and things, right?
Yeah.
That's really what he's trying to do, and I think there's something to it. I really do think that people like to follow teams, they like to follow personalities, like to wear jerseys, they like to cheer. Whether he can do that with poker is still... I'm still not sold on it right now. But I think back to... you know, back when I used to watch poker on TV all the time, and it's tough for me now to think of, did I watch it then because I was just a fan of poker, or did I watch it because I was a fan of the personalities that I was watching?
I mean, I
really think right now it was the personalities, because I'll tell you, the show that I really liked was, I forget what network it was on, but it was some kind of like rotating tournament thing where, you know, the top players, Johnny Chad, Jennifer Harmon, were all on there, you know. They had to play like four tournaments against each other, sit and goes. And then they got points and moved on. That was the most interesting thing on TV poker related I've ever seen.
That was Poker Stars, I think. Poker Superstars,
right?
Yeah.
Because there was an added strategy in it. It wasn't just poker. It was like, oh, hey, I got to finish third in this tournament, or I'm out of the tournament.
Right.
That turned it into more of a sports thing for me than just watching dudes play poker. and it really only had a couple seasons and then died. But so I think, and because I knew all the players, right? They were all the big players, and I knew the personalities, so I was invested. I mean, it's interesting because what we like about this sport is that any one of us could be the next world champion, right? Get on a lucky run. But I don't like watching us play poker. So it's weird because we like that aspect of it, but we also don't like that aspect of it. So I think it's possible for him to do what he's trying to do. But what I don't know is, I mean, am I going to pay $25 to get front row seat to the next poker superstars?
Yeah, see, here's the deal. And people recognize this right away when the boom happened. So it was all done by editing that makes it entertaining. The only thing that makes it entertaining is that you're watching the best stuff, the most interesting stuff at the moment on TV. Take it from someone who has covered probably close to 50 or 60 tournaments live. It is the most boring thing ever to just sit there and watch poker forever. And then the only thing that makes it exciting is that it's going to be over soon. And you can't wait for it to be over so you can interview the winner and write the story or whatever. And I love poker. Everybody that listens to the show loves poker. Everybody picks up our magazine and loves poker. And you love poker because you play poker and you enjoy the actual playing of it. To be on the sideline and be on the rail, okay, it's one thing to support Scott when he's in a tournament going deep and I busted in the first hand and I'm supporting him. It's another to do it, pay money to do it, and go watch someone for hours at a time who could go out in one hand and you have no idea what's going on anyway. It's right. When you're watching it on TV, you get to see the whole cards, you're seeing the best of the best, and that's what makes you the fan, because of personality. They show you the personality, they show you the ones they, it's just like Survivor. If you start to watch a show long enough, you realize the people that are getting most of the airtime are the ones that are going to make it to the final three. Because they know, they want you to care about these people, and they're manipulating your feelings or thoughts about people so that you're watching them to the end, so you keep watching the show. It's the same thing with poker. They start showing, oh, look, we got on the outside tables, we got Sean, you know, what? And so, like, what's going on with that guy? Why are we all of a sudden hearing about this guy? And then all of a sudden, now he's got a big stack, and now you're following him. Boom, he's at this feature table. Then all of a sudden, he's November 9. It's like, wow, how'd they know to pick that guy? Well, because they're editing it. Right, and that's what makes it entertaining. So for me to say that it's now a fan experience and, you know, intertwined with esports industry and all that, I don't disagree with the esports thing. I think that's always going to be, you know, in there. But to say that it's a fan experience more than a gambling experience, for you to be a true poker fan, you have to play the game. You know, I don't think there's anybody out there who just watches poker and doesn't play, you know, at least in the home game or a fun thing or online for no money. They're at least playing the game because you have to be part of it. If you just be a fan, there's no way I would pay money to just sit there and watch people play poker. There's just no way.
Yeah, and I think that's where it's tough to say it's going to be intertwined with esports. I mean, I can see people wanting to pay to sit there to watch this 18-year-old play Call to Halo 6 or whatever, right? Because there's something on the screen to watch, right? Yeah. You know, in poker, there's nothing really on the screen to watch. You know, you throw some stats and stuff there, or statistics or that, but that's really it. You're really watching people play cards. Now, even, you know, to his credit, you know, we said before on the show that Alex is doing this, like, hot box kind of thing with shot clock and all that, so he's trying to do whatever he can to speed it up and make it as enjoyable as possible, but it's still never going to be as fun as watching a guy play a video game on a big screen. Okay? Right. So, but the one thing I will agree with him is that there are two groups in poker, and there always have been, and it's interesting how one has had a lot of power before and whether that group will still continue to have as much power as it did. And that's what he said, the vocal minority, the professionals and amateurs aspiring professionals. That's one group of poker, and then but the vast majority of poker players aren't in that group. So the folks that are probably listening to our show, the ones that are coming on our cruises, they're you know, reading our magazine, right?
Right.
And I guess I'm interested from their point of view whether money really is important. You know, I went through the TSA my last flight back and had my Annie up hoodie on or whatever, right? And the TSA agent, after he checked my license, was like, "Oh my God, Annie up, you play poker?" Like, yeah. And he literally, there was nobody in line, but he spent 5 minutes there in front of the X-ray machine talking to me about poker. and he's never played for money. He just plays on like Yahoo or something like that and just loves it. But also recognizes, you know, hey, it's probably not the same as playing live, right? But here's a guy that's literally sounded like he plays a lot.
Right.
For nothing. And loves it. So, you know, it's tough. I think people like you and me and probably a lot of our listeners are kind of in between these two groups. You know, we kind of like following professionals and that. We definitely like playing for money. We're not the type that you're going to see spending 3 hours on Yahoo just going all in or pre-flop. So maybe there's a third group in the middle that's really key to all this.
Yeah, maybe. I can separate myself from money if I knew nobody cared, or if you're going to play for no money but care. You know, it's like when I play with my family in the beginning when we first started doing this years ago. You know, they took it seriously and they tried to win and they didn't want to lose. And so then, you know, when someone doesn't want to lose, you can use that against them, just like in money. It's a factor. You can bluff them or whatever, or at least they're not going to play horrible, horrible hands, and you can take their range down to something. So if you know they don't care, and no one cares, and you're just there to try to crack somebody's aces or something, then you go with that mindset. So as long as I know going in what the parameters are going to be of playing for no money, I can enjoy myself. Mm-hmm. It's just... it's so much. You know, you get a legitimate performance out of someone when you're playing for money, and yeah. If you're playing for enough money, like even our home game, you know, I think that it's not enough. But that, and that's why I, so that way it doesn't break our banks and we don't. But I figure right. If I wanted that's to play,
yeah.
If I wanted to play like with you and Faso and everybody for a legitimate amount of money, I would get your real game that way. And our I still don't think we get our real game because we're there to really have friends and to talk with and to chill with and also get a little better at this game and maybe make some money if we can. But I think that our real games aren't being displayed when we play at our level the way we play at. And I don't think... and that there's a reason for that. I'm not saying we should. I'm not even recommending
this is
that.
Actually probably playing into what Alex is saying here, right?
That, right.
You know, we've demonstrated that we can have fun playing for stakes that are well below what we would normally play for in a casino.
Right. Or at least... yeah, or I'm saying, or at least to find out what level of player you really are. Like, I think that, you, like you said, when you would never sit down at a 2-4 table.
Right.
Ever. And neither would I. But that's what we play for in our home game. And it's like, no one in the home game would probably sit down at a 2-4, but yet that's what we play for in our home game. That's why the first time I hosted a cash game at the house, it was a 3-6 game, because it's like, I just wanted to be a little bit more important than, and that still isn't. Well, I would sit down either. I wouldn't even... I maybe sit down at that, like, if we were visiting a poker room together and that's the only game they had, but I had to kill the whole night, I'd probably sit at 3-6. But other than that, you know, we would never sit those. It had to be at least 4-8 or 5-10, you know, stud 8 or something like that for me to sit down. Right. And so, yeah, maybe there is that third, like you said, that third group or whatever that... I just don't think it's enough to fuel the next... whatever it is that he's trying to push.
But the key to what he's saying is that that group that is willing to play for fun has to willing to also be willing to pay to go watch poker.
Yeah.
Or pay to buy poker jerseys of their teams or otherwise support it somehow.
Yeah.
Or literally just watch it on TV and hope that there's sponsorships, which is always tough. So that's tough.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I don't know.
We'll see what our fans say. But kind of related to it, the last other piece of news that came out this week is the fledgling Poker Central, poker's first 24/7 television channel, has its first cable deal now. The network, which is currently available only on the internet, will be broadcast through 850 smaller cable companies that are part of the National Cable Television Cooperative.
Didn't even know that existed.
No, I imagine if you were in these 850 smaller cable company areas, you probably heard of them. But these are not the Time Warners or the Comcast. These are, you know, these little, mostly rural, probably.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think they apparently just buy up spots and stuff. I wouldn't say it's exactly what Heartland does, but, you don't ever see Heartland on big networks either, right? You see it on random smaller networks.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time I saw Heart. I mean, I have Fios, so I don't know Verizon, so I don't know if it might be on one of those sports channels in there that I don't. I see Poker Night in America on CBS Sports Spectacular
right,
or something,
yes,
but
yes, yeah.
I wonder.
Well, maybe not, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I've seen that lately, but. Well, that's good, though.
You guys start somewhere, right?
When we first talked about this, I wondered, because they call it a 24/7 television channel, and I'm like, well, it's not on TV, it's on the web.
Yeah.
So they're finally getting there. So if they get success from that, then the other ones might take notice, and maybe it'll be on one of our cables down here somewhere.
Right. It all depends on ratings.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
So we'll see.
Anti-updates. Honda Casino in Arizona is the latest room to commit to hosting an event for Antiup's Restock the Shelves charity food bank initiative with Blue Shark Optics on January 18th. And many participating rooms have added event details, including extra chips and raffle tickets for donations for food or cash. Get details on all of our Restock events, including how you can volunteer for Team Antiup by visiting antiupmagazine.com/restock and encourage your favorite poker room to host an event, too.
Yeah, also, I just want to put an extra plug in here, too. Team Blue Shark Optics is kicking our behinds on having members volunteer for their team.
Uh-oh.
So we need a lot more of the Antiup Nation to step up and volunteer. We're not asking to do anything other than just to show up and play on our behalf. Certainly, if you want to do more to help promote the event, that's great. But we just need you to show up and beat the tar off of that Blue Shark Optics volunteer. So please go to the website and volunteer if you can make it out to some of our events.
One of the things, too, is I saw a story last week, I think, on Yahoo, and it was about if you want to really help donate, make sure you donate cash. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to donate food, you know, donate the food that people eat.
Right, yeah.
You know, and then that isn't expired.
Rooms and stuff, right.
Right, yeah. Donate food that's expired from your cabinet, and you're just like, I want to get free extra chips. Here's a can of, you know, chestnuts from 2012. You know what I mean? So if you give them money, they're going to be able to supply a real good meal for somebody. And if not, if you're going to get them stuff that's not outdated and stuff they would eat, that you would eat, you know?
Yeah.
That's always a good thing, because otherwise, you know, if they throw out half the food that you're giving them, it's not serving a purpose. So don't forget our Papes series. That's the Play Antiup Intercontinental Poker Series. It's our free online fan series. So it holds events on all dates that end in a 6. So look for December 16th, December 26th, and January 6th for our next 3 Papes events. Details can be found at the Antiup Nation Events Group Discussion on PokerRadius.com. Each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline at 206-424-6145 or emails us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This week's prize is a 30-minute telephone lesson and workbook from Thomas Gallagher Casino Seminars, which specializes in poker odds and math at poker911.net. It's an audio clip.
Audio!
Which we haven't had in a while. Our hotline doesn't ring very often. Need to get you guys to call more. Comes from Sean D. That sounds like a rap name, doesn't it? Like Heavy D. And, well, let's see what he has to say.
Hey, Scott and Chris. This is Sean D. from Southern California calling. I had a question about bankroll management and what your tips are for growing one from scratch and whether you would take a second job to help pay for a new bankroll. Thanks, guys, and I really enjoy the podcast, well, PokerCast, and I look forward to listening to more shows.
All right, well, I guess the best answer to this is how do you handle your own finances, right?
Uh-huh.
Because I think we do it differently, maybe. I mean, I don't have a poker bankroll. I go when I want to play poker, I go play what I want to play. And if I win money, it goes back into the checking account. If I lose money, I'm only wagering what I feel that's comfortable with my overall household budget to be wagering. I know I'm unique in that. Other people have a specific role that they're using to build, and then they take some out for household expenses or whatever profit, but they only play with that role. So... it sounds like he wants to have his own role here, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't want to do it my way where, you know, it's all commingled, right?
Right.
So I guess I kind of like his second job idea if, you know, to kind of get a role going. The problem with a second job means it's less time you have to play poker.
That's right.
So there are trade-offs there, right? If you don't want to do a second job, then I guess you kind of do old school, just kind of... you know, squirrel some money away. Say, hey, I want to put 10% of my income into a roll, or 5%, or 1%, or whatever it is, and kind of like a Christmas club, right?
Yeah, or a layaway from Kmart.
Yeah, save up and get that 1% interest at the end of the year and blow it at Walmart.
Well, yeah. I'm I'm the opposite of you. I do have the bankroll. I've always done that. And whenever we talk about bankroll, I always chuckle and think of when Ken and James is on the show. First time ever. He's like, who has a bankroll? You know, but he doesn't live in our world. You know what I mean? He doesn't live in the real world. He was a poker pro, so every dime he has is his bankroll because he's a professional. So every money that he accumulates, that is his bankroll, but it is his living expenses too. So he kind of didn't live the way we lived, but I very much have the same little box that I keep the money in, and it's hidden away. And because he wanted to know if there were tips for building the bankroll from scratch, the first thing he wondered. So me, what I did was I thought to myself, okay, what would I do for entertainment this week if I wasn't a poker player? Because I just started playing poker and wanted to start playing for money. So I said, what would I do? Well, I might go to the movies with the wife and go to dinner. So I said to my wife, hey, if we don't go to the movies this month, do you care if I take that money that we would have spent $30 at the movies and $70 at dinner and take that $100 and go enter a tournament or five tournaments, you know, or whatever it was online or whatever? And of course the wife said that's fine, which, you know, we do our separate expenses anyway. So I didn't really do that, but it was sort of a in my mind thinking, okay, how much money would I spend if I was taking my wife out or if I was going out myself, whatever. And I took that money and I didn't go out that month, or I didn't go, and I took that money for that entertainment and I said, okay, here's $100. Now, what can I do with it? Do I put it online? Which at the time, online was perfectly normal.
Right.
And I think I put it on PokerRoom.com.
Oh, PokerRoom. Yeah, I remember that. Remember you were the fat guy, right?
Yeah, I always tried to be like the cowboy or something. I don't know. But and then there was 888, too, I think, was really loose. I made so much money on 888 that I paid off my house. So that's how I started. But since online isn't an option for a lot of people now, you could easily just, you know, take that money and start a home game or go to the, you know, and play the cash games down at the local casino if you have one or whatever. But that's how I did it. Every month, in the beginning, to be truthful, the first tournament I ever entered, I won. So I always had a bankroll. But if that doesn't work out for you, then you just do it again the next month. All right, well, what am I going to cut out this month if I want to play poker instead? And so you get the bankroll started. Now, he's suggesting taking a second job. If that's the case and you're willing to do that, then you never have to worry ever again, because the amount of money that you're making in that job will always be the bankroll. You know what I mean? And then as you're adding to the bankroll, you can see just how successful you'll be doing what you're doing. And if you're continuing to win without having to dip into the bankroll again, then you can quit the job. But I wouldn't be willing to do the second job because it's not that important to me. It's for fun, and I can always find money somewhere for fun. And but if something that you want to do seriously like that, and you have the time, Scott said the important thing there though is how much time you can dedicate to this job. Is it going to take away time to play poker? And then, yeah, I'm working all the time. I can't afford to play poker, but I got a bankroll builder with a job.
It's possible. If you had a fairly let's say less rigorous 40-hour week job, you know, the solid 40-week job where you're not like doing overtime or salary stuff like that, right? And you do a 10-hour job at $10 an hour, which means you clear $2 an hour after taxes. that's $200. You go on a Saturday, right? Yeah. Saturday's your poker day, and kind of work like a dog the rest of the week. So it's possible. I guess what I like about that for people that are trying to build a bankroll is it sets parameters for you. And I think a lot of people need parameters set for them. You know, even though we're all smart human beings and can just figure things out, if you have parameters, then it's easier, right?
Right.
So if you know, hey, I'm going to make it this 10-hour a week job, that's going to be the money I can spend on poker this week. And when that money's gone, I'm done. I can't go, all right, well, I'm going to take a little bit more from my other job because I feel like playing today. That sets some discipline, right? And that's always the big thing for folks that are trying to build a bankroll and maintain a bankroll. The biggest thing that kills it isn't whether you're good or not, it's the lack of discipline. To be able to get up from a good game, stay at a good game or get up from a bad game and quit. So it does set some artificial parameters for you. Also, it probably is going to make you, it's going to force you to decide whether you want to play poker at this point. I'm like, you know, hey, to be able to play 10 hours of poker on the weekend, I got to work 10 hours during the week. Is that really a trade-off I want to make?
That's a good point, though, about the setting the parameters. I never really thought about it that way. If every single week you took just what that check was and cashed it, and then when you were done with that money, you brought home and put it in a bankroll that you don't touch, and you do this for a while, say 6 months, every single week you take that check, you cash it, you go to the poker room. When you're done playing poker, you have money left over, you take that home, put it in the bankroll, leave it there. And then you go the next week, take that check, cash it, and keep doing that. And if you lose it all, okay, well, that's the money I could play with this week. I've lost it all, but my bankroll at home is still intact. You're forcing yourself to build a bankroll, you know, with the money that you have left over from your session. And sure. Then each week you're contributing to it until eventually you've got this massive bankroll where you say, you know what, I looked at my finances over the last year and I win 8 out of 10 times I play. And when I do lose, it's just what that paycheck was. So I think I can learn to now manage what I have in the bankroll and take 10% of that or whatever it is.
Yeah, it'll force you to make choices, too. Yeah. You know, hey, I can't, do I want to play the 2-5 game? Well, I only made enough money this week to sit comfortably at the 1-2 game. So it's going to force you to play the 1-2 game.
Yep.
Or, wow, hey, there's a big satellite for a big, World Series circuit event here this week, but it's going to take my entire amount, my paycheck. Do I really want to just play one tournament where I could be out in the first hand? Or do I want to sit in a cash game where I have a chance of making less money? But a better chance of making money, right?
Right.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's probably the way to go. I mean, if you're suggesting that, that's probably, it means it's in your mindset to be able to do that. So just kind of depends on what else you got going on in your life.
Okay, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. We'll have Hollywood Casino Toledo Director of Poker Elliot Schechter tell you how he would have ruled. Comes from our good buddy Dave Bloomberg, speaking of Survivor. He says, a very drunk player has stacked his chips way too high. Oh, he must have played poker with you.
Oh.
I remember once, I want to interrupt real quick, but I remember when we were at the World Series that time together, and you were playing the cash games in the Brasilia room, and you were playing like 4-8 stud or 4-8 Omaha 8 or something. And I walked up to you, and you had these gray chips. I mean, it was like the Great Wall of China in front of you. And I'm like, why are you stacking them so high? You're like, I have no room. And it was true, because that table was packed, and everyone was playing 4-8 or whatever it was, and they were using white chips, or gray chips, or whatever they were at the time. But I couldn't even see you if I went on one side of the table. You couldn't even see that your hands were reaching around. It was hilarious.
Yeah, in a less busy room, they would have sent a chip rounder over to color you up. But
yeah, they were just so busy.
Too much there, but yeah.
And you could have been drunk. I don't know. I don't remember that part.
If I had that many chips, I probably was.
So anyway, he says, this player goes to make a bet, and in the process of doing so, he knocks a bunch of red $5 chips off a stack into the middle of the table. There's no official betting line, but the floor rules that all the chips that went past his cards were the bet. The floor notes that he ruled this way only because this happened while the player was making a bet.
Elliot says, public service announcement. I urge all players to alert poker room supervisors to very drunk players, and I strongly encourage all my colleagues to put very drunk players into cabs rather than letting them get themselves into any trouble, legal or otherwise. As for his bet, even with a betting line in play, I would not hold this player to any specific amount or even a bet. I would probably not make a sober player leave the chips in the pot, and I'm certainly not going to put any player on any thought ever. How are you supposed to know he wasn't just making the reach, grab and tank move or the grab and check? If he's too drunk and has slowed the game down, wouldn't it be better to risk his anger by removing him from the game than by making him leave chips in the pot?
That's a good point.
Yeah, there's probably going to be some comments about this, I think, because I think some players, you know, like they sit down, there's a drunk player there. That's a game I want to be in. I want to take him for everything he has, right?
Yeah.
Where from the operator standpoint, I know they train these folks to, not only look for inebriated players, but also look for players that they think are problem gamblers, right? And identify those and get them out of there, you know, because neither one of those are good for a casino.
Yeah, there's a fine line between compassion and, hey, he's an adult and he's playing in and I should be able to reap the benefits of not being drunk at the table. And, you know, if he wants to sit down and be drunk and play, then he's going to have to suffer the repercussions too. So I can see both sides of this. But I do think compassion, this is a business, but we're also human beings. We have empathy for, a situation where it could get out of hand. So I guess it just depends on the level of drunkenness and mistakes and what he's doing to the game.
Yeah,
some players play better drunk.
Well, it's true, true. I mean, obviously, this appeared to be an accident, right?
And
I like what Elliot said, is, you know, it happened sober. I mean, sober people aren't immune to accidents, right? So, you know, if he's not going to let a... If you come over and see that I knocked all my chips over, I'm like, sorry, I had 4,000 chips in front of me because you don't have a chip runner to color me up, you know, and he's probably going to roll, all right, yeah, it was a mistake. It's an accident, and, you know... Let's redo it right.
Yeah.
So if you're gonna do that for a sober person, you gotta do that for a drunk person. So I think really the key is here is as much as some players want that drunk player to stay there until the money's gone, probably a better idea for players and definitely the staff members point them, hey, this guy might have had a little bit too much fun tonight. Let's send him home and let him.
Hey, we get to see what O'Malley's move is gonna be today. This is awesome. We get to
complete
an episode, and this is a good one. So here we go with part one again.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are seated in a six-handed, no-limit Omaha 8 cash home game. We are a semi-regular in this game and know three of the other players at this table. The blinds are 50 cents, $1. We bought in for 100 and have 175 in front of us when this hand comes down. The blinds post, the under-the-gun folds, and we look down at the ace of spades, jack of hearts, 10 of clubs, 4 of clubs. This is a borderline hand, but with 175 big blinds, we're going to make the call and see if we can hit a flop. The cutoff calls, button folds, small blind completes, and the big blind checks. Pretty standard for this table. It's been timid pre-flop, and then the aggression kicks in post-flop. With $4 in the pot, we see a very interesting flop. The queen of clubs, 6 of clubs, deuce of clubs comes down. The small blind checks, and the big blind makes a $5 bet into the $4 pot. Remember, it's no limit. We've flopped a flush, but it's not anywhere near the nuts, and we currently need a 3 for the nut low. The opponent we're up against plays the game well, but is far too loose. He sits with $80. We're going to call and reassess the situation on the turn. Everyone else folds. The turn is pretty ugly. The 4 of hearts comes down, counterfeiting any chance we had at a good low. With $14 in the pot, our opponent makes the same $5 bet. So, are we conceding here? Raising? What's the move?
All right, easy fold for me. Our only option at the low is a live ace, which is almost certainly a chop. Our high is nowhere near the nuts. The goal in this game always is the scoop, and to scoop with the nuts. We have nothing working here, including the fact that we're somehow playing no limit instead of pot limit.
Yeah, I've never sat down on the limit Omaha 8 unless it was for fun, bringing that back. But I don't know if I would want to play. I think we've done it before in a home game one time. Somebody might have called it, but it's insane. It's not a good spot for us, so I have to agree. And we don't have anything that's worth the $5. I lose more money with second-best hands on Omaha 8 than anybody in the world. So
that's probably good competition.
You know,
that is where people lose the most money in 08.
And so we usually do that at pot limit or a regular limit, so it can only be more ugly if we do it no limit, so I'm folding.
Yeah.
Here we go. Here comes what happens.
Hello again. This is such a call-me bet. But can we afford to make it? Of course we can. Should we make it? That's a whole nother story altogether. Our opponent didn't raise preflop, which to me suggests he's on some kind of a low draw, or he hit it on the turn. But why the overbet on the flop? Was he protecting a made hand? Maybe it's the ace of clubs with another low club, and he knows he has at least half locked up. Honestly, that seems like the most likely scenario. He overbet the flop to make it a mistake for any sets or two pairs to call and draw out on him. Now that he's gotten it down to just one opponent, us, he's not as afraid of being drawn out on and is suckering us in. This may be a tight fold, but I'm going to make it. If this is a worst-case scenario situation and he has what we're afraid he does, ace of clubs, x of clubs with a 3, we have 0% to win the high and 0% to win the low and a mere 8% chance to get quartered. This, to me, is very likely. I know that we have the chip stack to make this call, but if we fear he has what we think he has, we really don't have the odds. We would have needed him to check or make a mini bet of $1 to make this a proper call. Again, if he has what we're afraid of. I wonder what a raise would have done preflop. We fold. Our opponent flips over his hand to expose an ace-7 low and the nut high. So, in the end, we saved a bit of money here. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, beware of flopped, non-nut hands in Omaha 8. They could cost you. I'm glad we got away from this one cheaply. I hope to see you on the felt.
All right, well, we have an interesting discussion going on about this on our Antioch group discussions at PokerRadius.com, so folks can chime in there. A couple people are saying, hey, it's just $5. Why wouldn't we call? So I'm going to say the answer is similar to what I tell some of our students who take our classes on any of poker cruises and who like to complete that small blind bet too much, you know? Yeah. Oh, it's only a dollar, right? And I tell them that just because it's a discount doesn't make it a deal. And so this here isn't necessarily a discount, but it's definitely not a deal. In Omaha 8, you have to be laser-focused on what portion of the pot realistically could be yours. Players who call small bets all day long with bad hands that have a hint of hope are what make others winning Omaha players.
Yeah, I remember I was looking at Poker Radius as well, and I think our good friend Vic was on there, and he was suggesting raising and betting to 30, and he gave this huge discussion why. But I thought if somebody locks up one half, and this person is obviously betting, has already locked up the nuts for the high, he's never going to get rid of that hand.
Right, right.
Especially, and so now you're playing for half the pot, too. Hopefully, and you may not even have that. And so, to me, to raise here is just you're risking 30 for nothing when another hand's going to be dealt 5 seconds later. This is a split pot game. If you're not going to scoop, I'm not going to put money in there unless it's unless I know.
You got to have the nuts on the other side.
Yeah, no nuts at all.
Otherwise, why?
So why would I want to add more?
I mean, there's some times when you've kind of eliminated the field and you think maybe your 8 low has a chance of getting low and there's an outside chance that your high might win, but it's very rare. And that's really, again, how people lose money in this game, I think. And, oh, I got a little bit on both. Well, if you don't have a little bit, you need to have a little bit more than a little bit on one of them to be profitable. And yeah, we got to talk about this no limit thing. I know it sounds like it's a home game, right? And I know people like to play no limit because usually it's because they can't figure out how to do pot limit, right?
Yeah.
Pot limit can be confusing to a new person trying to figure out the betting and what the, you know, unless the gambit's in your game, then it's fine, right?
Right.
But you shouldn't be playing Omaha 8 no limit. And, you know, if you can scrounge up that old Full Tilt Poker Strategy Guide, there's a great column or chapter from Howard Letter about why this game can't be played no limit. And I don't want to, like, misquote it, but it takes away all the odds. There's a reason it's pot limit is to make plays, prevent you from making plays that just ruin the game. You know, I think some of his discussion is that there are lots of times where you would just, if you can go all in, why wouldn't you go all in?
Right.
It's just going to give people bad odds. And I'll give you one of the example I know is that if I have, if I flopped a nut flush and there are two low cards out there and I have no low cards in my hand, right? So I've got the nut right now. Obviously, it's still vulnerable because it's Omaha. I would raise all in at that point because I know I'm going to get some idiot that's got ace deuce and is drawing to that low to call a ridiculous amount of money to hopefully hit that low because he thinks, hey, if I hit that low, then it's the nuts, right? So that just skews the game too much. So, you know, I know it's much easier to play no limit. Best thing you can do, though, is watch a little YouTube video. I'm sure there's some 14-year-old kid out there that's done one that explains how to figure the pot.
Right.
And play pot limit. And it's going to be a much, much better game, I think.
And I hate PLO 8, too. Pot limit Omaha.
Well, that's true. It's
great.
Also kind of a bastardized game.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. And then you're making it no limit Omaha 8. I mean, it's just absolutely the worst game ever. I mean, like you said, people are going to. We did that. I played in that home game in Connecticut when Lauren came down from Manhattan. And we played, and they wanted to play every game no limit. I convinced them that they shouldn't be doing that, and they finally changed. I'm sure when I left, they were like, all right, that idiot's gone. Let's go back to no limit. But they were playing, like, no limit on, like, double flop and stuff, which we've done that in our home game as a kind of a, hey, everybody's broke except, you know, Faso or something. Let's all make it all no limit, get our money back. But really, you're just bastardizing a game, and if it is for just because you want to make it easier on yourself, don't do it. Just someone figure out how to make it pot limit or whatever, but pot limit 08 is just is ridiculous. I hate that game.
It's stuck as a split pot game, so yeah. It's usually not played that way at all, and it's definitely not playing no limit, but anyhow, it is an interesting hand from O'Malley, and we'll see if the discussion continues at PokerRadius.com.
Absolutely.
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at AntiUpMagazine.com. This week's prize is 1 month of free poker strategy videos from One Hand at a Time, home of poker instructional videos online. AntiUp listeners save $30 by registering at onehandatatime.com/AntiUp. This comes from Bill Zaklis. And he says, this is his first ever submission to AntiUp. Hope you're kind with your responses, little smiley face.
Now we have 7 fans. All right.
You know, and here's the thing is I kind of felt bad because we really eviscerated that poor guy last week, Ryan, I think his name was, right? So every once in a while I get off the show and I'm like, and I kind of feel like, you know, Ron Burgundy when Christina Applegate changed the thing and he said all those nasty things about San Diego. I had no clue, right?
Yeah.
Go about my world and I'm like, wait a minute. I think that was really too harsh on that guy on the show, right? But he sent an email. He's like, I love the fact that you ripped me apart. I'm like, all right, good.
Yeah. Well, that's why they're sending it in. They want to hear what they did wrong. Or
right. So, Bill, sorry, I can't promise you we're going to be kind to our response. We're not that kind of person anymore. All right. It's a 1-2 no-limit home game with a max bet of $50 per round. So, interesting when we play no-limit. There's a little cap on there. But, you know, some states actually are capped on which you can bet, too.
So then it's not no-limit. I love that. It's like the hidden immunity
idol.
It's
kind of like a 150 spread limit. It's probably the most accurate.
It's not the hidden immunity idol if they have
that's
it.
Right. I hate that. Oh,
so it's not no limit if you can only if there's a limit.
Yeah, yeah. So technically, it's a 150 spread limit.
Yeah.
But yeah, nobody but people that were around when Mount Rushmore started know what a spread limit is. So, but that's what it is. 9 people at the table. We are under the gun, and before the deal, I throw in 4 for straddle. Okay, Bill. So you're that guy.
You're that guy.
The 3 people call a straddle. The cutoff raises to 16 total. The button calls and it folds to us, and we get our first look at our cards, and it's the King of Spades, King of Clubs.
Fold. It's Hand of the Week. I know where this is going, probably, so let's just fold it now. And well, somebody made 16. We're in the straddle, and we're that guy. And I guess if we're in the straddle and we're always that guy who raises when we're in the straddle, that's what you're supposed to do. Then you got to do it anyway. You don't want to be
spot for that, right?
Cute. Yeah, it's perfect spot. So let's make it the max 50 because 48 would have been what you'd probably make it anyway. Yep. So let's just make it the max 50 and see what happens.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think you're right. If you're the straddle guy, and please don't be the straddle guy, then I think you have to race usually. And then this is what you're hoping for. You're hoping that you get a good hand there, and then people think you're just being that guy again.
Yeah. Yep.
And they're going to come along, and that's exactly what we want here. So, and particularly, you know, we're kind of vulnerable, too. I mean, the kings are great, but, you know, the fact that we had that max bet, it kind of works like pot limit. You know, every time we're playing pot limit, no one actually raises 3x or anything. They're like, it's pot.
Yeah.
Oh, repot you. Okay, oh, repot you. Next thing you know, everybody's got, like, 7 houses on the table. So I think it's the same thing here, too. If you make it 50, everybody's like, oh, okay, it's 50. That's what it has to be, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think anybody blinks at it. So
he can make it 66 then, right? He would make it 50 on top of
this. Well, this is a max bet of 50 per round. So I don't know whether that means the bet stops at 50 or you can raise 50 on top of everything. That's a good question, actually, because that would change things. Let's see. He says he can... actually, no. All right, we'll go ahead. He says he makes it 50 on top of the 16. So, yes, all right. I guess you can make 50 each bet.
Okay, cool. So that means the people who haven't been in the hand yet are now facing $66, which is pretty decent.
Right.
Okay.
All right, so that's what he did.
Oh, good.
Under the gun, plus 1 goes all in for less. Under the gun, plus 2 calls. Everyone else folds.
Oof.
So I guess the cutoff actually was just making a move there.
Oof.
Interesting. All right, so we're going to the flop with 100, squeakily 160 in the pot, and we're heads up with the third person all in, and the flop comes queen, 8, rainbow.
That's a good flop for us. I mean, I can't imagine it being a bad flop for us unless somebody has a queen, which is possible. I mean,
well, that was what I would imagine.
You know, but I mean, only 8-8, queen... anything, and ace-ace are the only hands really we're losing to. It's it's a pretty decent flop.
I would prefer it to be like 6-6 because I think it's less likely somebody has a 6 in their hand than a queen because people like to play Broadway cards. So,
but I think I'm going to have to bet. I mean, I took control of this hand and I'm, you know, that's still a decent bet. That's a decent board for a pair of kings, you know.
And this is kind of where I like the fact that it's spread limit here too, right? Because, you know, we can only bet 50. I mean, we can pay it less than 50, right? But it's 160 in pot, so... So it's a max. The max it could be raised is another 50, right?
Right.
I think there's no question here. You bet the 50, right?
Yeah, you gotta bet the 50. That's the problem with the cap, too, though, is let's... I'm not changing the hand or anything, but let's just say it was queen, jack, 8... or something, you know what I mean? People, or two, and it wasn't rainbow or something. And then you're like, okay, well, now you're giving them 3-1 on their money every time you bet. Oh,
that's true, yeah.
That kind of sucks. That's what the...
Well, it sucks on that side, but it benefits on the other side. Again, yeah, you figure out how to play the game properly that you're sitting in. So, yeah, so you're right. I think you could play a lot more suited connectors and things like that, right? Because, you know, you're not going to be able to get priced out of the right odds.
Right. Once it's a pre-flop raise like this, though, when it gets to that 160 or whatever,
right.
You know, earlier on, you still have crappy odds if it's normal betting, but in this case, I guess I'd have to. I took command of this hand. I have kings. It's a pretty decent flop for us. Not a great flop, but it's not a bad flop. You have to think that way going in until you get more information. So I'd bet 50.
Okay, I would do 2. So what's you? First act, and he says I check, and my opponent makes it a max bet of 50.
Huh.
I guess the benefit of this is if there is a queen, we've limited our liability here. Right?
Yeah, because now we just
call. He can only bet 50, so.
But you have to hope he's going to bet. You know what I mean? Otherwise, you're losing a street of value.
No, absolutely. Yeah, so. I'm just saying now, I think we made a mistake checking. But the fact that if he does have a queen and he only bet 50, it actually works in our favor.
Yeah, it works. I'm just calling then. I'm not raising, I don't think. I think I'm happy with that bet.
Right. Plus, it kind of disguises it, makes it look scared, and maybe we're not really that scared, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, because he could have been taking a stab at it there. You know, thinking, okay, we're afraid of the queens or overcards and or whatever. We had ace king, but you know, I don't know. You wouldn't raise to 50 with
ace king, probably not. Yeah, I guess the other weird thing too here is you're betting 50 into a almost a dry pot, right?
Yeah,
all in for less. I don't know what all in for. I don't know how much less the player all in is in, but because you know you got to show this hand down, right? So it's not like you. It's not a bluff bet here,
right?
So he's got to have something here. And that makes me a little pause a little bit, doesn't it?
I think so. I mean, that you're right, that if he's willing
rainbow,
to bet into this...
Straight, I guess there's a little bit of a straight there.
9-10, jack 10.
Yeah.
Gutter.
No flush going on. A pocket ace has us crushed. A queen has us crushed.
Pocket aces, they could have done that, been sneaky and just called a pre-flop.
I mean, it's a tough laydown to make here just based on that, but generally speaking... It doesn't make sense for him to make this bet without having something.
Yeah, I mean, well, you're right. I mean, it could have been jack-jack we had.
Yeah, best case is jack-jack or something like that, right?
And we're...
Or tens or something like that that would... Those hands make sense.
Yeah, so, I mean, there are hands that would make that bet that are still losing to us. And you could make a bluff at it. He could think that we have something like 10-10 and we're afraid and
right,
now he's trying to steal
it. Right, but
what
I'm saying about the bluff is it depends on how much is in the side pot. We don't know that.
That's true.
There's only $10 in the side pot. Why am I betting 50?
Yeah.
The showdown. And,
all right, let's try to figure it out real quick. So we have 50 and the other guy had 50. That was 100. The guy made 16. He's not in the hand anymore. So take 16 onto that. So that's 116. So the guy could have gone all in for like 34 or so. Or 40. So it's probably a... It's probably not that big of a side pot, like you said, so you're right.
3 straddles, yeah, so...
But then again, if he knows he's got the best hand, or that it's unlikely that guy who went all in could have hit the queen-queen-eight board, he could still be, you know, trying to take down the entire pot. I don't think he's thinking side pot here. I think he's thinking the whole pot.
Yeah, so it was 35 and dead money before it got there, so take that out. So 125, plus we're both in for the max of 60. Yeah, actually, the guy for less had to have almost nothing in there.
Well, let's see. We made it 50. The other guy had a call 66, right? So our 66 and his 66 is 122. Plus, yeah, so the guy had almost nothing. So you're right, so it's the whole pot.
16 and dead money plus all the straddles.
So he's playing for the whole pot, really.
Yeah, so that changes things. So, you know, now he could be... Now he could be playing. Of course, if he... gets us out, he still has to beat the other player, too. And he can't bluff that guy out now, because he's all
right.
in, right?
Right, but the other player doesn't have much in there, it seems. After we've done the math, right, he doesn't have that much in there, so it doesn't matter. There's a lot of money left over.
Yeah.
It's worth making a bet here, regardless of what happens. So I would have bet, but since we didn't, I would call this 50. I wouldn't raise, I'd call.
All right, here it says, I think for a while, but I did not want to fold, so I called. Turn does not approve me, and I check again. I guess we don't know what the turn card is. And okay. Our opponent bets again.
It bets what? 50 again?
50, sorry.
Okay. This guy's not afraid. He wasn't afraid of our check call either. I don't think he thinks we're drawing, so if he's still betting, he's probably got a queen. Or he's got aces, or he's got some weird, maybe even 8-8, but why would he keep, I guess he'd bet 8-8. And I guess he'd bet that. So, yeah. So, it's going to be tough now. I'm wondering, do I want to risk another 50, another 50, and hope I hit my king to make a better hand than three queens? That's like, now you're betting 50 is another 50, that's another 100, so I don't know if it's worth
it. It's interesting here, too, because implied odds get messed up, too, by the max.
Yeah.
So I don't know what our stacks are here, so maybe it doesn't matter, but, if we're playing deep here, then, you're not going to be able to stack a guy if you hit that, right?
I really don't know if I would fold here, though. If I'm in the game, really, and I'm playing, and I got king-king, and that's the board, and then some random deuce came on the turn, I still think my kings might be good. I think this guy, I don't know. He could have a queen. If I believe in my heart that this guy, just by the way he's playing, or what type of player it is, who it is, if I can believe that he has a queen, I would fold. But if I think it's just some guy who plays any two cards all the time, and he's just the kind of guy that likes to take advantage of position on me and stuff, I might call. So this is a really depend moment for me. This isn't a clear, cut and dried
thing. Well, let's go back to what you said on the flop. Very well could be this guy has jacks, tens, nines,
yeah,
sevens, sixes.
Yeah.
And so this turn, this mystery turn, doesn't change any of that unless the guy actually hit a set at that point, right? So we don't know anything more different than we did before, so I guess it goes back to what our thought process was on the flop, and we don't know, all of our hero says he didn't want to fold. He didn't say why he didn't want to fold. So if we feel like we're good, then obviously we need a raise, right? If we just kind of think we're good, then we got a call. But this bet doesn't change anything to me, I don't think.
Well, it does tell me that he is not afraid to bet our checks. So
right. At some point, all it says is he wasn't bluffing necessarily.
At some point, he has to. If he doesn't have a queen and he doesn't have a full house, he has to worry that we have one of those two. Right. And we're just check calling him and getting more money out of him. So the fact that he keeps betting means I don't think he's afraid of that, which means he might have that. And that's what the information it tells me. So I don't know if he would continue to bet jack-jack or 10-10 here. He might check and minimize the $50 on the end.
The other way of thinking for him, too, is why bet here if he could check behind and know his rest of his liability in this hand is 50.
It's 50 bucks, exactly. So by betting, I think he has the queen now. Now that we've reasoned it out here, I think he has a queen.
He wants money, right?
Yeah. So I think I might fold now. Reasoning it out that way, I might fold.
All right, well, I'm tight as a drum, so I'm going to...
So you're folding?
I think... this is tough because it goes back to the flop. Really, it sounds to me like we're calling just to hope our hitter king, and I don't know if we had the odds to really do that. So if that's what was going through our mind, then now we're betting another 50 bucks to hit the king when we have only one more shot.
Right.
And not that much more money in the pot. So if that's why we're doing it, that's a bad reason to call. If we actually do think that there's a fair chance that this guy's doing it with jacks or tens or something that we have beat, then that's a different story. And then I'm going to call it 50. The other good thing is we know is this hand's only going to cost us another 100 if we call here. This 50 and then the 50 on the end. Unless we hit. So I guess now you start doing the odds. Another 100, it's already 160.
260 after that.
260 in, so...
Yeah, I don't think that's the right odds for the money.
Another 100 in to win 360. Yeah, not there.
It's going to cost you 100. Well, after that, we already bet... Yeah, so you have to call 50 on the turn to win 260, 310... Yeah, 6-1 on your money with a pair of kings. I don't know. See, that's the thing. I don't know about the odds there because I don't really know. what are the odds? You only have to be right X amount of times. You know what I mean? That doesn't seem like... I'm using the information that I'm getting from this guy, and he's telling me he's not afraid to bet again after I check called. So I'm going to fold here.
All right. Well, our hero folds as well, face up.
Huh.
And the opponent flips over ace-queen.
Yeah.
Third player does not show.
Yeah, so he lost. Wow. Yeah, ace-queen. It makes sense. When we talked about, when we reasoned it out, there just was no reason for this guy to keep betting 50 if he thought that we were slow playing him, and he would never think that if he had a queen in his hand, so he doesn't worry about anything. The only thing he has to worry about is pocket eights, and really, he's obviously not worried. He's betting, so he's opening the betting up for us to raise him another 50, and so he doesn't care. So this guy clearly had a queen, and he did, so...
So his final question is, I don't think I could have played that any differently except for folding on the flop bet.
Well, I think he could have bet out, but again, that as we see, it wouldn't have made a difference, so...
Yeah.
Not that he couldn't have played
at that point, we would have known the guy was raising us.
Yeah.
At that point, maybe we re-raise, and then if we get re-raised again...
Yeah, then you know you're beat.
Then it's really hard to think that we're up against jacks or tens or something we can beat, right?
I would say he lost the minimum.
Yeah, because if he did it that way, it would have cost him $50 more than it did this way.
Yeah, yeah.
So he lost less, although you had to fold on the without knowing for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So here's the big question. What do we learn?
I think what we learned is that you have to understand how the betting limits change the game. I think this $50 max played a big role in this hand. Maybe not necessarily in this particular hand, but in this game, there's a lot of decisions. If you're just a normal 1-2 no-limit player where you can play table stakes, and you sit down in this game and you play the same way, I think you're going to get burned.
See, that's informative, but what I learned was don't straddle.
Yeah, but we've learned that before.
Yeah, yeah, the poker gods like to screw with straddlers, and that's what happened here. So, well... Sorry you lost, Bill, but hey, for your first hand of the week sent in to us, this is a pretty good one. It made us think about a lot of different things. So, I'm Chris Cosenza.
I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.